Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, Hawaii considers a travel ambassador to Canada to try and convince Canadians to return to the islands, and the Delta baggage delivery guarantee gets a bit of a downgrade.
In our Smarter Traveler segment, we gave you some tips for visiting national parks this summer last week. Guess what? We have an update at 11:22.
Our personal information is being collected in a lot of ways every day. Consumer advocate Chris Elliott joins us at 11:35 for a concerning discussion about how that could come back to haunt us.
At 11:50, we talk to Scott Johnston about the new food concessions at the airport. More options for before you fly.
Fresh off a drive along the Mother Road, it's my pleasure to welcome you to today's edition of The Travel Guys.
On the road again.
Mark and Tom, the travel and entertainment guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for coming along on a beautiful, unusually warm Saturday here in Sacramento. I'm Tom Romano, and right over there is Mark Hoffman, just off the mother load.
Yeah, literally. I mean, just off
the mother road, I guess.
just off the plane this morning. Thank goodness United Airlines was on time from Oklahoma City to Denver and Denver to Sacramento, or you would have been doing this by yourself.
Yeah.
So we spent 4 days traveling. When we started, we landed in Chicago, it was 25 degrees. The next morning was 27 as we headed over to Lou Mitchell's for breakfast and very famous old place on the old highway. And by the end of the day in St. Louis, it was in the 50s. By the time we got to Oklahoma City yesterday, it was in the 90s. So try packing for a road trip like that. It reminds me, Tom, getting out on that old highway, how much, you know, for some people traveling internationally and going to Africa or the Louvre in Paris or to Scotland or to Ireland for St. Patrick's Day or any number of things around the planet people like to do. I guess I'm just an old school guy. I for 30 years I've been taking people on this down this stretch of highway that is very historic and marks a big turning point in America when people got in their cars and could go places. And the people along the old highway, there are lots of little vendors and people that they're just regular people. And what they're doing is what's been happening along that piece of concrete, that ribbon of concrete for 100 years now, and that is people are just trying to make a buck, you know, off of travelers or going down the road. And that has changed quite a bit on the interstate, but it hasn't changed that much if you get off the interstate and you're on the old highway. There still are these wonderful little places and people that you can meet and talk to, and it's a highway with personality.
Well, I have to explain to our audience what's going on here. Mark, who has Sports Leisure Trout Vacation, which takes people to different places, will be taking folks along the Mother Road, Route 66, here in a couple of weeks. And what Mark does oftentimes, he will go ahead of time on his own with his buddy Tyler oftentimes, and they will check out all the spots that you're going to see when you take your trip to make sure that all the things are in place. Now, Mark has done this multiple times, and here again, it just reassures that your trip with Sports Leisure is going to go well. Mark, did you anything new on the old road?
Yeah, a few little things that are new. We're going to do a Route 66 show in 2 weeks and take on the whole back half of the program and take people down the old highway and introduce them to some of the people who I think are really special along the road. But what's new this year is here are all these little towns. I mean, think about you go out of Auburn and you've got downtown Rockland and Penryn and some of these places. We've got a few of them around here. Some of the little towns up and down Highway 99 probably would qualify. But these people are buying new flags for their flagpoles that say, you know, for the light poles that go through town that talk about Route 66 is centennial. And, you know, things are just a little cleaner and a little more fixed up, and things have a new coat of paint. And people are anticipating, hopefully, that a lot of folks will go out and experience that old highway this year. And I judging from the response and the number of tour groups that are booked in various restaurants and places along the way and stuff like that, I think that they're going to have a banner summer on the old highway, and that makes me very happy.
Outstanding. Well, all right. That's a mini update, and as Mark said, we'll talk more about the old highway later on. We are the Travel Guys, and at the top of every weekly show, we bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel news. And there's been lots of it, Mark.
There is. Here's a couple of fluffy things to start with. United Airlines and their flight attendants are near a tentative contract deal. Why is that important? Because if you think the TSA lines can be an issue, what if one of the country's major airlines stopped flying for a few days or a few weeks or something like that? So anyways, they are getting close to an agreement there. And speaking of United Airlines, their CEO, Scott Kirby, says he expects oil prices to continue rising. Could be as high as $175 a barrel, he says. Their annual fuel bill could rise by $11 billion. So United is cutting a few flights, raising some fares. Remember, we talked about this last week. So don't be surprised if, you know, you're a regular flyer to San Diego and now you go back and find that the cheapest fare is now $20 more than it used to be. That would be the fuel. So those things are starting to happen all over the place. Hawaii, this is a cool story, I thought. Hawaii is contemplating creating a travel ambassador position within their tourism framework in the islands, because Canadians have stopped coming to the islands. There are about 20% fewer crossing the border in cars and about 15 to 20% crossing the border in planes, unless you're talking Las Vegas, in which the number of no-shows is higher. In Hawaii, the number of Canadians not visiting the islands, the number of Canadians has dropped by almost 50%. So that's a real hit to the island culture. And of course, these people, it's not that they're not visiting island nations. They're just going someplace besides the United States. So Hawaii has decided that the position would be a part of the Department of Business, Economic Development, and Tourism. And the ambassador would be appointed by the governor for 4 years, and their job would be to get the Canadians to come back. So I think that's a fairly innovative idea. American Airlines app has been updated now. If you're an American Airlines flyer, it will now explain why your flight is canceled or delayed. It'll be interesting to see if they tell the truth or not. Airlines are known for not exactly being honest with their customers. But the goal is to give flyers more clarity into the situation surrounding a flight disruption, so they feel empowered to make necessary changes to their itinerary when travel is interrupted. You know what that reads to me? If anything happens to your flight, don't call us. Go on the app and figure it out yourself.
Yeah, we know nothing about it.
Yeah. So they feel empowered to make necessary changes to their itinerary when travel is interrupted. The empowered part, that's you. That's not somebody on the telephone or somebody that you can talk to. That's you that's going to make those changes. Delta Airlines. Did you know, Tom, Delta Airlines has a baggage delivery guarantee?
Oh, no, really?
This has been out there for...
Unlike other airlines, huh?
They're not the only one, but they say that 20 minutes after your plane pulls up to the gate and the door opens...
Right.
I think the door opens is when they start the clock ticking. If your bags don't arrive within 20 minutes of any domestic flight, you're eligible to receive 2,500 miles if you file a claim with Delta. To streamline the process, Delta asks customers to submit those claims online no later than 2 hours after the flight arrives. The only problem is that this whole two-hour thing used to be 24 hours. So now if you get the bag and you get in your car and you drive home and you stop to get something to eat and you bring your baggage into the house and open it up and you're like, oh, wow, I wanted to get those miles. Also, it's interesting to note that Delta's giving you 2,500 miles, but they're not offering to refund the baggage fee.
Yeah.
The 2,500 miles, let me just clue you in, are not worth the money that you paid for the fee.
For the bang, yeah.
So even when they don't deliver it to you on time, what they're offering as a remedy, I suppose, is a nice gesture. Alaska Airlines will give you a $25 gift certificate towards a future flight, which is worth a lot more than 2,500 miles. So I that's the other airline that has a guarantee. But anyway, Delta has kind of downgraded theirs from giving you a smaller window in which to file your claim for a bogus 2,500 miles. I mean, it just seems to me like if you're going to charge me to check my bag, my expectation is that it arrives on the carousel in a reasonable period of time.
Right.
That's my expectation. You charged me, so I assume you have enough help to handle the suitcases and to get them on the belt promptly so that I don't have to wait too long. Oh, well.
Now, if your bag doesn't show up, and maybe it doesn't show up for a couple of days, at what point do they refund you your baggage fee?
Never.
Never, never, never.
I won't say never, never, because there probably are particularly higher status flyers who can go back in. But my guess is that even if you can convince them to refund you, they're going to refund you with a travel credit as opposed to refunding the actual baggage fee. Because heaven forbid somebody like me would go on the radio and start telling people that, hey, you know, if your bag didn't get delivered, get your money back. Because that would be a very bad thing for the airlines. It's way better for them to offer you a paltry 2,500 miles and make a big deal out of a baggage guarantee, and make it really difficult for you to collect on that paltry 2,500 miles than it is to actually have a program and actually put together something that works. Just one man's opinion.
Well,
baggage guys, you know, the guys that are working outside and stuff like that in all kinds of weather, heat, cold, all that kind of stuff. You're sitting inside the airplane. You're watching them load your bags. That was happening in Denver this morning. So I feel for those people. They're not, I'm sure they're not making a king's ransom. The airline is ripping us off by charging us $35-$40 a bag, many of us, unless you've got some kind of status or special circumstance with the airline. So it's we've talked about it before. It's a big part of their business operation now is charging for those bags. And if you don't believe that, then why did Southwest stop letting you fly with two bags for free and start charging you for them? Because somebody said we're leaving money on the table.
Do you, I know I do, and I imagine a lot of folks do. You get an opportunity, you see the little cart with all the bags pull up alongside the plane, and you start looking for your bag. And you look to see if you can see your bag.
Mm-hmm.
And when you finally do see your bag, you either see it gently loaded on, well, never, or completely thrown halfway across the.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they can be pretty brutal with those bags. So you want to make sure that you pack appropriately for the bag to get some heavy use.
We watched this morning in Denver. As I told Tyler, I said, look out the window. There's our suitcases. Because they had
yes.
brought them from whatever gate we had come from, and they mm-hmm. had put them on a luggage container that said, you know, gate B49, which is where we were loading. And they sat there for a while. I said, God, I hope they're going to put those on the plane. But I was secretly hoping that they would be the last bags on the plane, and they indeed were. And I said to Tyler, I said, this is very good. He says, why is that? I said, because we're really short on time this morning and our bags are going to be among the first ones off the plane. And that's indeed what happened. So last in, first out type of thing. But anyways, if Delta doesn't deliver your bags in 20 minutes from the time the door opens, go get your 2,500 miles. Don't pass on it. It's a paltry apology, but I would hold them to it if I were you. If you wonder why communities and chambers of commerce and tourism organizations and the like spend a lot of money to build sports complexes or to host sporting events, you know, the Super Bowl, the Final Four, even things down the road, even things like kids baseball tournaments where a whole bunch of kids, we saw this in Oklahoma City last night. There were kids everywhere, middle school kids. There was a big girls softball and boys baseball tournament in town. And in the area where we were, where there were about 7 or 8 hotels, we were in an Embassy Suites and there were just kids everywhere. So
lucky for you.
Well, yeah, but imagine the money that those people, those parents and children are spending. And here's a really interesting statistic. Headline says business travel to Miami soars during World Baseball Classic. Miami International Airport saw business travel increase by 2,520% during the World Baseball Classic. Think about that. That's instead of one person coming, 26 people came. For every single person who came before the Classic on business, 25 to 26 of them came while it was going on. The top cities of origin for travelers, mostly eastern cities, Boston, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and San Francisco. So all of those people coming to Miami for the World Baseball Classic and business, hypothetically, and spending a truckload of money while they're there on hotels and meals and all of that stuff, that generates a lot of money for the Miami economy. And that's why those people make those decisions and compete to try to get big things, small things. It can be as small as a 500-person convention. But those things do really generate a lot of money in your community and a lot of jobs. We have a tourism bureau here in Sacramento that works very hard to try to get people to bring their meetings to Sacramento. And of course, the fact that we have much better air service than we used to, and that our air service is not as, doesn't have that hub extra thing on it, like you're flying out of San Francisco or something like that. It's much cheaper. People in Napa will tell you it's much cheaper to fly from Sacramento than it is from Napa. Speaking of big sporting events, there's a lot of confusion over visa fees. World Cup visitors are making their travel plans now. You know, the president had proposed a $250 visa integrity fee. It would apply to all travelers who need non-immigrant visas to enter the U.S. The fee now exists, but it hasn't been implemented. So people are not paying that yet. But people don't, in foreign countries, don't know that. There was so much publicity about it. And so there's a visa waiver program that there's all kinds of ways for people to get into the country. But the point is that it's perhaps not as expensive as it might have looked like it was going to be a few months ago. But it is deterring World Cup visitors. And as we just pointed out with the Baseball Classic, those people will spend a lot of money in our country and then they will go home. So for those of you who are concerned about, you know, illegal immigrants and stuff like that, traditionally people who come to these big time sporting and other types of events, they're not illegal immigrants. They're people who have come on a vacation. They're going to spend a truckload of money and because that's what those events cost, and they're going to turn around and go home. So another example of travel being international visitors really being a big part of a plus for our travel economy. And unfortunately, we're doing a lot of things to discourage those people from coming. And that is your travel news for today.
And we are Mark and Tom, the travel and entertainment guys. Thanks for coming along. Last week in our Smarter Travelers segment, we gave you some tips on visiting national parks this summer. Well, we got an update for you. I think you're going to find this educational. That'll be coming up next right here with the travel guys. Mark and Tom, the travel and entertainment guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations.
Hey, I got to interrupt
for coming along. What's that?
I got to interrupt for a minute. You know, for a long time, several years now, there's been a Rudy's Hideaway spot, a commercial, at about after the travel news. So there hasn't been one the last couple, 3 weeks. And several people who listen to the show have asked me, what happened to the Rudy's Hideaway spot? What happened to the specials at Rudy's? And you're a buddy of Steve's down there at Rudy's. Why don't you explain what's going on?
Well, first of all, to say that people actually bothered to tell you that they were missing a commercial
Isn't that bizarre?
Says a lot. I don't know. Maybe it was the quality of the commercials that we did, or they're Rudy's fans and they just like hearing about their favorite place that talked about. Well, oftentimes the first of the year, Rudy's doesn't have any real new specials going on. So, you know, they save a couple of bucks by maybe taking a month or two off on their advertising. And, you know, they're popular enough to kind of survive on their reputation and such. I can tell you that they always have their Monday special. That's continuous the time.
Tell Steve that, you know, that his fans missed him. I've never had anybody ever say anything about a commercial spot on the Travel Guys in almost 20 years that we've been on the air. But I think and I will confess, I guess, the people who have mentioned it to me are, as you mentioned, are fans of Rudy's. And they're just wondering, you know, they want to make sure that something isn't going on with their favorite restaurant or something.
Oh, no. Rudy's is up and running and doing fine, folks. Yes. And we'll have some new specials to talk about in the near future, I'm sure. So don't worry.
Last week.
Thanks for being concerned.
Last week, okay, we talked about getting into national parks this summer and the fact that Yosemite was getting rid of their reservation system, which kind of created order out of chaos. It allowed people, you know, if you had a reservation, then you were in the busy time in the summer, you were getting in. If you didn't, you were going to wait in a line and, you know, kind of like pre-check and non-pre-check. So it was going to be more of an ordeal. That reservation system has gone away. The Park Service has made some attempts at trying to explain why it went away. I guess the concern was that it was keeping some people from being able to come, but it was also eliminating these huge lines at the entrance, not only at Yosemite, but some other places. So anyway, last week we told you that a good way, if you were visiting national parks, Yosemite or anywhere else, get your butt out of bed early in the day and get into the park early. Or if you're already staying in the park, get up early, because that's before everybody else who slept in can get there. We left out one important part of Yosemite. You can buy an entry pass in advance. You can, in fact, buy an entry pass, an annual entry pass for all national parks, or you can buy one just for Yosemite. But you can go online and do that. I didn't find the link until just before the program after my plane had landed today, so I don't know if it's up at travelguysradio.com yet. But just type in National Park Annual Pass into Google. And it will give you all of the details. But anyway, that's another way to get in. And the more people who buy the advance pass, even if it's just a one-time pass as opposed to an annual thing for all of the parks, it'll make the line go faster when you get in. So I recommend to folks that you consider buying your park pass, your entry into the park before you get there. And that will give you, and also if you buy a national park pass, if you're planning a sojourn this summer where you're going to visit some of the parks, maybe the parks in Utah that are so incredibly beautiful, or you're going to go up to Yellowstone and Grand Tetons and maybe Glacier, something like that, the park pass will save you a few dollars and also might save you a little bit of time. So you can check that out as another way to get around this lack of a reservation system.
Some years back, and I don't remember how long, but it's been a while, we brought to people's attention the option to buy a lifetime pass if you were over a certain age. And I'm imagining that those are still available. My wife and I, we signed up. We paid almost nothing. They came in the mail, and we have them all tucked away, and we're set to go anywhere, anytime with our lifetime pass to national parks.
Wow!
You know
wow.
if that's still around, Mark?
I'm researching as we speak here. It was called a Golden Age national park pass.
Well, thank you. I appreciate me being in the Golden Age.
There should be some rewards for surviving a few years.
Absolutely. The smaller meals that senior 55 and under.
It's valid for your lifetime, mm-hmm. and it's $80.
$80.
So
less, yeah.
Yeah, the annual thing for non-Golden Age folks is $70. So $80 for the whole whatever time that you last is for people 62 years and older.
Well, so, there you go, folks. Now you know.
It's not called the Golden 62. Age Passport anymore. It's called the Lifetime Senior Pass.
There you go.
So there you go. Yes, another way to get into the national parks. $80 for the senior pass. Hey, I have one other item here that I forgot in the news, Tom. This is probably not terribly important to more than one or two people. Southwest Airlines is cutting a couple of airports out of their schedule that they have added in recent years, and these make perfect sense. Starting in June, they are no longer going to have flights from Chicago O'Hare Airport, and that makes perfect sense because United and American dominate that airport, and Southwest has basically its own airport, Midway, in Chicago. So they just felt, I'm sure, that they needed a presence where all those other people were so that they could get a few of those customers away, but they have decided that it's not prudent. Also, Chicago O'Hare is desperately trying to reduce the number of flights there. So they're going back to all of the airlines and saying, hey, this is our goal, so you need to help us get there before we have to do something radical. So Southwest has just decided to leave. They had 12 flights a day. They also have pulled out of Dulles Airport, which is a big United hub in outside of Washington, D.C. So they still have service to Washington National Airport. So you can still get to Washington, just like you can still get to Chicago on Southwest. But they are eliminating those two. A representative for Southwest said the discontinuation was part of the ongoing efforts to refine its network. And the way you do that is you eliminate cities where you're not making money and airports where you're making money. And I suspect that's what happened with Southwest. Hey, back half of the program has some good stuff after this break, Tom. I'm not a big conspiracy theorist, but Chris Elliott latched on to something about all of this information that's being collected and some ways that it could be used that might not make everybody happy. And he explains that in an interview that we taped earlier this week. And then we'll go out to Sacramento International Airport and find out some of the new food facilities that have opened up.
Right. Chris Johnston will join us and talk about that. I think you're going to be real excited about what's in store for your palate out at the Sacramento International Airport. All of that and more coming up next here on The Travel Guys.
We're going places with that sports leisure flair, a world of adventure, and we take you there.
Talking about a world of adventure, Sports Leisure Vacations has a couple of escorted trips coming up the second half of this year that if you're an international traveler looking for adventure, you might consider. We are going to Mexico's Copper Canyon in October. If you've never heard of the Copper Canyon, it's bigger than the Grand Canyon. It's quite a sight to see, and travel in Mexico is a little less expensive than traveling here in the States or in Europe. So the Copper Canyon in October. And if in November we are taking folks to one of the planet's hottest tourism destinations right now, and that is Japan, an escorted trip visiting the northern half of Japan. You can get more information on both of these trips by going to sportsleisure.com. Sportsleisure.com, Copper Canyon and Japan coming this fall.
Welcome, everyone. Again, Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for dialing us in. Don't forget now, links to our special guests and so much more can always be found at TravelGuysRadio.com. Time to bring back our number one consumer advocate and friend of the Travel Guys. Always glad to have him once again. Chris Elliott, welcome back to the Travel Guys.
Hey, guys. It's nice to be back.
And Chris, you are coming to us today from Australia?
Yes, I'm in Melbourne.
Melbourne, Australia. So, folks, if you sense a small delay between some of our back and forth conversation, it's because Mr. Elliott's on the other side of the planet. So it takes just a second for everything to get back and forth. Chris, you wrote something that caught my eye a couple of days ago. It caught more than my eye. It kind of caught my stomach, too. It made it turn a little bit. The headline was, "The government wants to know everything about your last trip." The subhead, "The Secret Service plans to use private data to bypass the Constitution. The results could spell trouble for your next flight." I am just going to turn this over to you. Please explain what you have found here and why it concerns you.
Yeah, so you know, I've been hearing from travelers who are concerned about their privacy, and one in particular, a woman who said that she had a new app that allowed her to get a discount on her car insurance, but in exchange, she had to allow the app access to her location at all times. And that got me just to thinking, you know, I mean, how much do private insurance companies know, and what does that mean? You know, who has access to that data? And as it turns out, the U.S. Secret Service has put out a request for a proposal from private companies who have access to your travel data. So this is all your airline tickets, things like that. And it wants to kind of do an end run around the Constitution and get access to that. And it wants to basically know where you are and what your travel data is, you know, where you're going, things like that. To see if it can maybe identify any kind of suspicious patterns, and that may, at some point, also include your driving data and your location data. So where you are, and when you allow your phone to have access to an app, that it could have access to that as well, which is really troubling for people who think that they can go places and that it's no one's business but theirs.
There may not be places that you can go where it's no one's business but yours, under what you're talking about. In essence, the government would have the ability retroactively to know where you went, how long you were there, probably some line of what you did. It's more than a little alarming, Tom.
You know, a lot of times when you get a new app or whatever, or even some of your old apps, it'll ask you, can we use your location? And then it'll give you a list of just while you're using the app, all the time, never, and then you have to make these choices, and you get so much of it. It's hard to, sometimes you just never know who knows your locations. Why is it that if you're a law-abiding citizen and you only travel to see friends and vacation, and you're not a threat to anybody, why should you be concerned whether the government knows where you're traveling?
That is a great question, because a lot of your listeners will be thinking to themselves, well, I have nothing to hide. I just go see grandma at Thanksgiving. I drive over there. And if the government wants to know about that, that's absolutely fine with me. Have at it. The thing is that we don't know what the government is going to consider suspicious activity or not. We don't know if they're, for example, going to have a false positive on you or some people that you're traveling with. One of the things that this system is working on is something called fuzzy matching. And it's nothing cute. There's absolutely nothing cute about fuzzy matching. It basically means that they can run a search and identify any patterns. So, for example, if you're traveling with a companion, that they can connect those dots and maybe connect the dots between your companion and someone else. Now, I have had lots of cases where people have been denied TSA pre-check, things like that, because they have a distant cousin who is a who has a criminal record, and then they get connected to that person, and the government says, no, we're not going to give you TSA pre-check because, you know, you were with this person at the Chris during the Christmas holidays, and we think that that's a suspicious thing. So there's all sorts of potential for shenanigans here. We don't know how the data is going to be used. And besides, this is the most important part, is we haven't really consented to the government doing this. This is something that they're doing in a very circuitous and roundabout way. Those are both mean the same thing. Bear with me. I'm just making a point. They are not getting our specific authorization for this. And it is also, by the way, unconstitutional.
Wow, good point. Good point. Never really thought about it from that perspective. Okay.
We're talking to Chris Elliott here on the Travel Guys on Sactown Sports, and we're talking about the government wanting the information on your travels. And Chris, you give an example here in your article that I'd like to cite here. You say the database could also be used for preemptive investigation. By monitoring forms of payment and ticketing dates, the government could flag anyone who buys a one-way ticket with cash or a last-minute flight to a protest-heavy city. and suddenly your right to travel is contingent upon whether your itinerary fits the state's definition of a, quote, normal vacation. It turns every traveler into a suspect until the data proves otherwise. So when you start, I'm reading your article and I'm thinking of it in what I consider a normal context. And then when you put the thing up about, well, they could figure out that, you know, you went to this place and, as you mentioned, you know, the government doesn't necessarily approve of it. So we're not going to allow you to go anyplace again, or we're going to come and talk to you about where you went.
Yeah, anything could happen. I mean, look, in today's day and age, with what's going on, we don't know who's going to show up at the front door. It could be ICE. It could be someone else. And they could have questions for us. Why were you in this city? What were you doing there? That kind of thing. That's what I meant to say in the commentary that you were referring to, is that we don't know, but we do know that data like this has been misused in the past. It does place the burden on you to prove that you're innocent. Like, no, I went to the city because I'm a tourist, not because I was protesting or I didn't want to go build a bomb or something like that. This is something that's straight out of a science fiction movie. It is so dystopian and it is so wrong on many levels. It's something that we have to fight against. Now, the interesting thing about this is that there was a program before where the government was trying to do this as well. And there was so much pressure on the government to drop it that they did. But then they picked it up again and they decided to kind of dust it off and rename it. And that's what this program is. They basically want to know everything about your travels. It's none of their business.
Well, Chris, with that being said, what are we supposed to do about it? What did we do before, and how can we get them to back off?
Yeah, call your elected representative. I know that you've probably heard this before. Don't let the government get any more information than it needs to. For example, this woman that I was talking about who had given her insurance company access to her location data, that's really a bad idea, especially if you care about your own privacy. So don't do that. And anytime that you can get involved, I know that there's a group called Epic that works for your freedom of information, freedom of movement, that kind of thing. And it works on data privacy. Support those types of organizations. And shameless plug here, we are also fighting for you here every day at Elliott Advocacy. And you can find more information about us at ElliottAdvocacy.org. That's two L's and two T's.
Chris, you had written just a few weeks ago about a related issue here that wasn't quite so disturbing, but the fact that the information that the airlines have about you and your travels could very well be used to charge you a higher fare or offer you something that wasn't exactly at the same price as, you know, dynamic pricing and the like. So we also have a story out there floating around that somebody who accessed all of our Social Security information a year or so ago took it away on a thumb drive, and now it's somewhere floating around the planet, 1 or 500 or 5,000 copies. Nobody really knows. So this seems to me to be an extension of that. It's time, I guess, for consumers to stand up and say no, and also to be very careful, as you say, about the amount of information you're allowing people to have. When you download an app or you open a website and it says, hey, we'd like to know your location, is that really relevant to what you're doing? If it really is, perhaps you want to allow it that time, but do you want that app to know where you are all the time and what you're doing? I think perhaps maybe not. So to Tom's point, though, what do we do about this, Chris?
I'm so glad that you mentioned surveillance pricing. That's what they're calling it. It's really difficult just to put an end to that. The airlines have the technology now, as you say, to track your actual location and your buying patterns, and to potentially serve you a fare that's higher, that's as high as they think that you're willing to pay. So there's no real market anymore. It's everyone, the airlines know who you are. They know how much you're likely to pay, and they're going to try to get as much money out of you as possible. The way around that is, of course, don't give them any information about yourself. Don't sign in as a frequent flyer, because if you sign in under your, you know, American Airlines Advantage number, well, then they know exactly who you are, and then they can start doing that kind of thing. Also, you know, use a VPN. Try to sign in as an anonymous user or an incognito. use a third party like Expedia or Booking.com because they're less likely to have all that information. So go through a third party. But ultimately, though, the technology is evolving so quickly that from week to week it changes. And it's very, very hard even for someone like me to keep up. But you have to keep fighting against it, because otherwise we will end up in a society where all of these businesses know everything there is to know about you, and they will start serving you a price that they think that you're willing to pay. And it may be a significantly higher rate than the one that they should be charging you.
Chris mentioned that there is more information on the advocacy that his organization does at Elliott.org, Elliott.org. There is free information there. There also is the opportunity you can subscribe and get some deeper digs into things. But I would strongly recommend to you also, some of you write me occasionally with travel issues or travel problems. And that's who I refer you to is on to Chris's group. He has people who will go after the airline, the hotel, the cruise line, the whatever, and try to help you get a settlement that is fair to you and fair to them. So, Chris, thanks for your time today. This is kind of a strange subject for travel people to be talking about. It makes me nervous to talk about government conspiracies to try to get our information. But this is something that people need to know about and need to know that it's going on. If it doesn't bother you, fine. But if it does, then there are things that you can do at least to minimize the collection of information. Thanks, Chris. Be safe down in Australia.
Okay, thanks.
Our favorite consumer advocate, Chris Elliott. He's been on the program a long time. Chris has a lot of integrity. I'm not trying to scare anybody, but I think this is a conversation worth having now as opposed to worth having later.
Scott Johnston, Senior Public Information Officer for the Sacramento International Airport, joins us to talk about food venues and construction at the airport.
Hey there, it's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Remember, links to our special guests can be found at TravelGuysRadio.com. If you've traveled out to the Sacramento International Airport anytime recently to either Terminal A or B, you see there's a lot of activity going on and plans for some new eateries locally driven at both terminals. And with us to talk about it is Scott Johnston. He is the Senior Public Information Officer for Sacramento International Airport. And Scott, welcome back to the Travel Guys.
Thank you for having me.
So Scott, give us a little of an update here. We've got some new restaurants for folks that are heading out to the airport and haven't been out there for a while or have never been out there. This is some pretty good news in terms of if you're looking for grub at the airport.
Yeah, absolutely. We have 18 total new concepts that will be open here in both terminals by the end of the summer. And right now, six of them are currently open. Last Thursday, we did a ribbon cutting ceremony in Terminal A for Magpie, New Helvetia Brewing Company, Centro Cocina, and a new Starbucks concept as well. And those are all located in Terminal A. Very excited about those being there. And we always want to give people a lot of dining options, a lot of different, price points. And these restaurants are all very representative of Sacramento.
Now, Starbucks in A is located on the street side of security downstairs. You said something about a new concept. So what makes this Starbucks different from others?
Well, we actually have a Starbucks in Terminal A now, too, on the secure side, on the west side of the terminal.
So we've got one upstairs and one downstairs.
That's correct. Yeah.
You never have too many Starbucks. Come on, huh?
That's actually true. And by the end of the summer, we will also have two Starbucks on the secure side in Terminal B. Mm-hmm. We realize that the Starbucks we have on the southwest side sees a long line. So we're putting in another Starbucks on the other side of that concourse to kind of help alleviate some of that waiting time.
So, Scott, what are some of the other new food concepts that have not opened yet that people can look forward to in the coming months?
Well, we have there's so many to mention here. I mean, there's going to be a one-speed pizza. There's a sidewalk juice that's open in Terminal B now, and A. We'll have Temple Coffee. Terminal B will have Next Taco. We'll have Bach, Cafe Bernardo as well. Well, there's a West Coast sourdough. The list goes on. And frankly, it's really exciting for a lot of reasons. It gives people a really great interpretation of the food that Sacramento is known for. And we're really excited and happy to say that 47% of our new concepts are small businesses. And that's up from 7% where we came from.
So you're looking for more local people with smaller businesses that will give folks who are traveling, not only people who live here, but people who are visiting here, a little bit of an idea about some of the things we have in our city.
Absolutely. The minute you come off the plane, you know, you'll be able to see some of these restaurants and realize that, you know, you can find those in town. And then if you're leaving Sacramento, it gives you one more chance to try some things that we really take pride in.
Before we went on the air, oh, by the way, we're talking with Scott Johnston, the senior public information officer with the Sacramento International Airport. Before we went on the air, I asked Scott a question that I think is important, and that is these restaurants that are local are also, you know, managed, and the food and the presentation will be the same as what you would get at their brick and mortar stores in Sacramento, so you can be assured of the same kind of quality of food that you would get at a Cafe Bernardo anywhere in town, or at Centro in downtown Sacramento. And I think that's really good news, because it's always kind of disappointing when a restaurant that you consider one of your favorites, you go there and it's nothing at all like what you recall.
And I'm hoping, Scott, that some of these folks, in response to questions that are often asked here about folks who are taking the 5 o'clock to Denver, or the 5 o'clock to Seattle, or the 11:30 at night to Newark, we need some of these folks to be open at odd hours so that people who are flying out of the airport early in the morning or late at night will be able to take advantage of them. Before we let you go, I wanted to ask you for a quick update on the construction situation out there. There, as Tom mentioned, there's a lot going on. You know, it's some cases, some days it's hard to find a place to park because of all of the moving pieces. Can you give us a quick update on the improvements that are happening?
Absolutely. Yeah. So just really quickly, the pedestrian walkway and the new Terminal B garage are moving along really well. Those are the two big visual projects we have here. The walkway will be open later on this summer, and the Terminal B garage, which will give us an additional 5,500 parking places. We'll also have the options of reserving parking there as well. That's going to be opened by November. But otherwise, I mean, we have plenty of parking here. It's just a matter of kind of planning ahead. Spring break, we're in the middle of that right now. We have our lots open. We have a new South Economy lot. Another thing that we like to mention is our shuttles are fully staffed. So, you know, in the past, we've had a little bit of wait times with shuttles were often things that people talked about. Those shuttles are now fully staffed. And then the current parking garage that is open, we're in the middle of changing the guidance system in that garage, which will allow us to leave it open longer. The last level is being worked on as we speak, and then that garage will be fully open as well.
By the way, if you travel out there and you're looking for a parking spot, be sure to go to the airport's app, and it'll give you a list of how many parking spaces are available in each one of the lots. And if you plan to park in the daily lot, it may say there's only a couple of hundred spots. I recommend that you go in the front and you go as far as you can to the left, to the very, very, very back of the daily lot. You'll find a parking spot absolutely perfect for you. You'll have a 10, 15, 20-yard walk to where the shuttle will pick you up. You'll be the first to get on the shuttle, because the shuttle just dropped off everybody at the airport, and you're good to go. So,
and you'll be the first one off the shuttle after your trip is over with when you come back.
Exactly.
You'll, You'll be the first ones. Oh, yeah, that's a pretty good tip, Tom. Of course, I get out to the airport often about 2:45, 3 o'clock in the morning, and there's no problem parking up close at that time.
You bet. Yeah. Well, that's not me. Yeah. Hey, I was there the other day at 7 a.m. and I thought I was really early.
Yeah, well, if you get there at 7 a.m., good parking spaces are already gone, dude.
I still get, like I say, in the daily lot all the way to the back. You know, yeah. Don't even think about going up and down the aisles. Just go, you know, just go all the way to the back row.
Scott, before we let you go, anything else that our listeners should know about the airport if they're traveling in the next couple months?
Yeah, I would say the only other thing that we'd love to add is that we are seeing some fluctuating times in our TSA checkpoint lines. And so just allow for that if you can. Unfortunately, we have no way of tracking what times are better than others, but just keep that in mind when you're coming to the airport. We've seen some times fluctuating here and there on the weekend, and we are in the middle of spring break, so there's more people traveling as well.
And even before this whole thing that's going on now with the partial government shutdown and the TSA guys not being and gals not being paid and whether or not they're going to show up for work or not, Scott, to your point, yeah, that was a sporadic, periodic, pretty much unpredictable problem already. Yeah. And so while our TSA men, Dale and Sid out there at Sacramento International have said that so far things are holding up pretty well. Obviously, if this ridiculous situation where we're not paying people to work until later, which is just beyond bizarre. And as you know, Scott, because you're close to this, if the TSA people don't show up one day, it doesn't matter what all the rest of us do or how right we get everything, because there won't be anything going on.
Yeah, we just ask that, you know, be patient with them. They're doing the best they can. They're really dedicated, and we appreciate everything they do. So, you know, keep that in mind when you're coming through the lines.
Exactly. Thanks, Scott, for the update. We will check in again with you. And in the meantime, later, if you have anything that you feel like needs to get out to folks, you keep us in mind.
Thank you very much, you guys.
Thanks to our guests today, Anthony on the board, and that's a wrap for us, the Travel Guys.
It is. Dance like nobody's watching. We'll see you next Saturday at 11 o'clock.